So Totally Business Savvy, episode 20. Happy end of 2010, everybody. This is Dean Soto with So Totally Business Savvy, and I hope you had a fantastic year. Today we're going to be talking about, we're actually going to have an interview with Hillary Korna. That's going to be awesome. I'm going to answer some questions about WordPress and some plugins, and going to talk about some cool things that have recently happened with my blog, as well as an ebook that I just put out. All that and more coming up. All right. Once again, thank you so much for being here. I am super excited about today. Lots to talk about. But first, I wanted to just give you a little update about some things that have been happening. First huge update is that prosulum.com is no longer. So you'll never hear me say prosulum.com anymore. It is now youcanworkless.com. Yep, youcanworkless.com. I still have my business, which is Prosulum, and that is predominantly web development, WordPress development, internet marketing consulting, and so on. But my actual blog, I decided to fuse into my passion, which is finding the best way to do whatever work you are doing. So, youcanworkless.com. Awesome. Yes, you just heard me clapping. That was okay. So, definitely head on over there. I created a new course there as well. I had a 6-day course before on, if you joined my newsletter, I had a 6-day course on prosulum.com, but this one is a whole new audio course, and I think it's much better than the last one, in my humble opinion. But yeah, go ahead, head on over there and check it out. So speaking of newsletters, everybody who was on my newsletter got my ebook, the 31-day ebook that's all about virtual assistants. Yes, if you have not joined the newsletter, you can no longer get it for free. Sorry, guys. Been talking about this for over 2 months. So I gave you plenty of time to join my newsletter and get it for free. But now those who were on it are the ones who got it. All right. But don't be sad. You can always go and get it. It is well worth the money. All the feedback that I've been getting has been awesome. So thank you so much for the feedback. I'll be putting up a lot of testimonials soon on the blog, just to let you know how well people have, how much people have actually liked the ebook and have found it to be extremely valuable. And just to let you know that since it's on virtual assistants, the actual design of the ebook was done by one of my VAs, and he did an awesome job. And also some of the content itself was done by one of my VAs, and she did an awesome job as well. So if you want to check that out, just go to my website. It's very hard to miss at youcanworkless.com. It's right at the top banner. You'll see it's 31 days to building a killer business with virtual assistants. Very, very cool. But if you want some more free bonuses or some free stuff, definitely go and check out the newsletter and sign up for that. Because there's a lot more free stuff, and there's always stuff that I put on my newsletter that you cannot get, that you absolutely cannot get on my website. So go check it out. All right, guys. So all that being said, I want to I want you to go get a piece of paper right now and write this down, or pull up a Microsoft Notepad or whatever notepad that you have on your computer. And I want you to write down the following number, 714-643-5301. That is my feedback line. I need more feedback. I get a lot of email. I get a lot of comments. I get even some Twitter questions, which is awesome. Don't stop doing that. I love it. But I want to hear your voice. I want to hear everyone's voice out there who has a question. And feel free to plug your blog. Feel free to plug your podcast, whatever it is. I don't care. Even if it's a product of some sort, I don't care. But I want some feedback. And I want to hear your wonderful, beautiful, lovely voice in that feedback. All right? It could be criticisms. It could be questions. It can be whatever. It can be praises. I always like praises and affirmation. All right. So let's get to the first question. This is going to be the only question. I'm going to save some questions for later. But the first question I actually got was from Doug Noble. And Doug had a question about WordPress plugins. Now, this is not an audio, even though it sounds like I'm leading up to an audio question, it is not. He left this in the comments. All right. This is in response to a post that I had put up just recently called My Ultimate List of WordPress Plugins That You Absolutely Must Have. Of course, yeah, you don't have to have them, but I have to put a title that is catchy, right? So people will click on it and read it. So what Daddy Doug, what Doug says is, speaking of using too many plugins, because I had mentioned that you don't want to use too many plugins because it can have some bad effects, are there any true drawbacks that you're aware of to using too many plugins? Do you know if having too many plugins could have any effect on how fast your site loads? And it's an awesome question. So a couple of drawbacks. Let's go with the one that you mentioned first, Doug. Yes, sometimes, depending on what the plugin is, your site will load a lot slower, especially if you don't have a caching plugin. And what a caching plugin does is it helps on the client side, but also on the server side. What it does, in a nutshell, is if you have a WordPress website, everything's dynamic. So every time someone comes to your site, their browser says, hey, can I see your website? And your website says, yes, absolutely. Let me go into the back and go get my website. So it goes into the server and calls up all the database calls, calls up all the HTML, calls up all the PHP calls, and so on. So it is working. It is working really hard to give that person a view of your website, a dynamic view. So for example, say you have a sliding gallery with all your pictures on it. Well, when someone goes and visits your site, WordPress has to go and say, okay, I need my sliding gallery. Let's load up all the pictures that are supposed to be in there. And it has to check that every time and check the pictures every time and call those all up. And that takes time. That takes a lot of time. So with a caching program, what it does is that for the most part, it will go and rather than doing all the PHP calls, all the dynamic stuff, it will, on the server side, it will actually cache all that and make it into an HTML site, a temporary HTML site. So if you have something like WP Super Cache or W3C Total Cache or Quick Cache, you will, in essence, when you visit your site using this, if you have it checked to where it will cache only for visitors, if you come in as a visitor, say you make a change, you probably won't see the actual change happen until maybe about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, depending on what you have set. You actually won't see that change because what the caching program did is it made a static HTML site for the most part of what your site was during that duration. I don't know if that makes sense, but let me give you an analogy. All right, so you walk into a store and the store owner says, okay, well, what would you like? You say, I would like some ricotta cheese. And the store owner says, okay, well, let me go get that ricotta cheese. The store owner has to go take the time to go into the back and check and make sure they have some ricotta cheese. Yes, I don't know why I'm using this as an example. But they have to go into the back. They go and grab the ricotta cheese. and they give it to you, you buy it and go on. The next person comes back and says, hey, do you have any regatta cheese? The store owner has to go back, use that time, use the resources to go back and find some more regatta cheese. But what, and essentially what the caching program is doing is, rather than doing that, as the store owner, they just go and grab a whole pallet full of regatta cheese and bring it out front. So as people come in saying, hey, can I have some regatta cheese? The store owner only has to say, oh yeah, here it is, boom, here it is, boom, here it is, because it's right next to him. He doesn't have to go and, you know, maybe he can even put up a display that says, oh, hey, regatta cheese, all here. You don't even have to ask. It's all there for you. Now the problem is that say nobody wants regatta cheese anymore. The store owner has this display of regatta cheese up in the front of his store. It's not really going to do much. So after a while, he's going to have to get rid of that display and find whatever other cheese people want. So it's like as if every 30 minutes he puts a special of the next 30 minutes or special of the day. It's almost like a restaurant doing a special of the day. So every day they're going to have a different special. Well, every 5 minutes, your site is going to be a certain way. Every 10 minutes, every 30 minutes, whatever you decide what it's going to be a certain way. This way, they don't have to constantly use resources. Now, why is this good? Why is this important? Because faster load times. One is faster load times. People, we do not have that much of a attention threshold anymore. Now, it sounds weird, but here's a question. How much time, on average, do people spend when they're searching for, when they're like surfing the internet? What is the average time someone spends on, say, a movie, a video, before they go to the next thing? The average time is 3 seconds. So if you can capture someone in that 3 seconds, you're good. But if you can't within that 3 seconds, if your video loads up and you can't catch them within 3 seconds, they're going to move on to the next thing. Same thing with a website. Average time is about 3 seconds. So if it's not loading, especially if they're using something like StumbleUpon, they are not going to wait 3 seconds for your site to load up. That's just the way it is. So the faster your site can load up, the better. The other thing is, say you have a huge popular post that Mashable or someone links to. There's going to be tons of people that are coming to your website, and that means a lot of resources are going to be taken up. Now, if you as a store owner are going to have to constantly go into the back room to get every item every time someone asks for it, and you have 1,000 people waiting for you and you have to do that every single time, obviously something's going to break. You're going to have a nervous breakdown. Same thing is going to happen with your website. It's going to have a nervous breakdown and shut down. It used to be called the Dig Effect until Dig basically stopped being a powerhouse, and now it's kind of leaning more towards Reddit. But so your site, that's another benefit of having a caching program, is that your site won't go down. So if you have too many plugins, yes, this actually happens. Too many plugins that are poorly coded, I should caveat. If you have too many plugins, one, you're going to have a lot more load time. That's just the nature of the beast. And two, especially if they're poorly coded, you're going to have slower rates of refresh. And then, not only that, you are going to have problems with compatibility. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. And usually it's not compatibility with WordPress, but compatibility with other plugins. There's been numerous times where I've had a plugin, I've installed it, and it just breaks everything. And that happens. It's with poorly coded plugins that are not tested well by their developer, they break your WordPress. And so you actually have to go back into the database, into the MySQL database, and change it so your WordPress installation is not calling that plugin anymore. And it can be a pain in the butt, especially if you don't know what you're doing. It can be a huge pain in the butt. But other than that, not too much. There's not too much of a problem with having too much plugins. The thing that I highly discourage is getting so focused on plugins that that's all you do. I fall for this all the time. I always think, wow, if I have this plugin, people are going to either sign up for my newsletter or they're going to read my blog more. I'm going to get tons of more traffic. That's absolutely not the case. I've never had one plugin, no matter how much it's been sold, that has increased my traffic dramatically or increased my newsletter subscription rate dramatically. The way that you do that is, one, by writing awesome content, two, promoting that content, and three, selling whatever it is that you want to sell. So if you are trying to sell your newsletter, you have to sell it. You have to tell people the benefits of joining your newsletter. Like, for example, for mine, you get a 6-day course on learning how to build a business from nothing to something that you can start earning. Plus, you get free things that you'll never, ever get on the site. I mean, those are two selling points that I have. So if you're not on my newsletter, I highly suggest that, because you're going to find so much more value in that newsletter than you will just on my blog. So that is selling right there. So you have to know how to do that, all that stuff. Plugins are just shiny metal objects that distract you from whatever it is. So if you have a blog that you're trying to sell things on, don't worry about plugins. Start making sales. Don't start buying all these magical plugins that are going to tell you that you're going to get a huge increase in traffic if you haven't made one sale yet. Because if you haven't made one sale, then something's wrong. It's either you don't know how to sell or you don't have the right calls to action and so on. Cool. All right. So, downsides of having a lot of plugins. Yes, site load. The other downside is that you can break things. And the last thing is that it distracts you. They distract you from what's really important, and that's content and interacting with your audience and all that other stuff. Very cool. All right, Doug, thank you so much for the comments. And see, you get a whole WordPress class on plugins just from that. Sweet. All right. Next thing. I was going to go and do some more questions, but yeah, like I kind of mentioned before, I want to go straight to this interview, and I'm going to tell you why. I recently met Hillary Korna and she is absolutely amazing. She has learned how to sell to her particular market in such an awesome way. She went from, and this is just in the last few months, she went from not having any type of speaking presence to being like a sought after speaker. And that builds gravity towards her brand and obviously towards her business and to other things that she wants to do. She took a huge risk, and I'm going to show you, you're going to hear what that huge risk was early in her career, and now is reaping the benefits of that as well. So without further ado, I'm going to start up this interview with Hillary Korna, and I hope you enjoy it. All right, everyone, I am here with Hillary Korna, and actually, I was going to do an introduction for her, but she has a really amazing story, and I wanted to have her tell it because I'm sure she could tell a lot better. So welcome, Hillary.
Thanks, Dean.
So tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I am actually from Columbus, Ohio originally, but I went to school at a private university called Elon University in North Carolina, and graduated in the year of 2007 with a double major in international business and Asian Pacific studies with a minor in Japanese. I actually graduated back when the market was still good, and despite all of the advice from my advisors and loved ones and family members and friends in my family, I graduated without a job and instead bought a one-way ticket to Singapore in hopes of starting my career overseas. And I basically just gave myself a budget in 2 months, and I said, if I don't find a job, I'll just come home. And within 3 weeks, I had 5 job offers, and the last one was from Toyota's Asian regional office in Singapore.
Wow, that is amazing. That is such an awesome risk to take. Like, right, I mean, totally counter what most people, like you said, your advisors and family members and so on would, nobody would ever say, hey, yeah, go buy a one-way trip to a country you've never been to and see what happens. So
yeah.
That is awesome. What was the process like? How did you end up actually looking for a place there and looking for a job there?
Well, basically, as soon as I made the decision that it was important to me to work overseas at a young age, there was nothing stopping me. That was my goal, that was my vision, and everything in between was very vague and very unclear, but I knew that that's what I wanted to achieve, and so I was to figure it out. I basically reached out to everyone that I felt appropriate reaching out to, who may have some connection in Asia, specifically in Singapore, connected with professors, connected with past internship bosses, connected with study abroad friends and students, and ended up getting offered an apartment by my friend's father. He offered for me to stay with him for the first few weeks when I moved there until I could get up on my own 2 feet and get a job. So basically, as soon as I landed, it was working every day from 7 a.m. to 7 at night, networking, having lunch with people, trying to connect with the community there, with the expatriates there, to make things happen. I joined the American Chamber of Commerce, joined the paddling team. It's called Dragon Boat. Uh-huh. Just a sports activity to try and connect with people. Joined the Chamber of Commerce and some other organizations to really just connect with local Americans living in Singapore. And then once I got the job offer and accepted the position, then it was really about researching the lifestyle, where I wanted to live. I lived in 5 different apartments before I found my one apartment that I ended up living in for 2.5 years. So it's all, you know, it's trial and error.
That is awesome. Wow. Wow, that is fantastic. So what was your biggest fear going there, and how did you actually overcome that?
That's a big question.
I know. I know. I asked the best questions. No, just kidding.
Yeah. Naturally, my biggest fear was failure. My biggest fear was not getting a job and succumbing to what everyone else insisted on being true, which was that I couldn't work overseas as a 22-year-old, much less an American Caucasian woman in Asia. Well, I ceased to accept that and went for everything opposite and rather worked for a Japanese company for 3 years. I would not allow myself to live up to that. I was scared. There were days where I thought I had been crazy, and what I had done, traveled halfway across the world to kind of reach out into this oblivion of working overseas, and I knew nothing about. But step by step, I just figured out, and you know, of the days that were bad, the majority of them were good, and just went with the flow.
Wow, that's fantastic. So what was what was probably the biggest benefit that you feel you gained from actually taking that risk and being a part of, you know, Toyota of Asia and so on? What was probably the biggest thing that you were able to get there and even bring back here? Sorry.
Okay, I'll have to answer this question in 2 parts, personal and professional. I think, first, professionally, first of all, it propelled my career above and beyond anything I could have imagined as a 22-year-old in the States. Within 3 months of working for Toyota, I had already been on business trips to India, Taiwan, and the Philippines, and then was running my own project of 10 people in the Philippines, managing my own expense accounts, and reporting directly to the Toyota Motor Philippines president. Wow. I would have never, ever had that opportunity had I worked domestically or stayed domestically as a 22-year-old. So one is propelling my career, having those kind of opportunities that used to exist in the U.S., but are really flooded with a lot of excess talent here now at the moment. The second part is personally. I think the biggest personal benefit is when you're put in a situation of that kind of extreme adversity, you're forced to understand yourself deeper, more deeper, in a much quicker amount of time. When you're sitting in your little home or your apartment in Chicago, Illinois, or you know, Columbus, Ohio, which a lot of my family members and friends are doing, even, you're doing the same routine, you're dealing with the same people, same environment, and you're not forced to grow. Well, when you're working amongst people who have different cultures, different races, different nationalities, different religions, you're forced to look back upon yourself and understand yourself more deeply, why you do the things the way you do, and how you can grow from what you're currently doing. So I think on a professional point, it's really propelling my career and having opportunities I would have never had as a 22-year-old. And from a personal point, it's just growth. It's really about exposing yourself to hardships, exposing yourself to adversities, but ultimately knowing that you take from that.
That's great. That is that really, really good stuff. Wow. And the fact that, yeah, you're absolutely right, that it definitely propelled your career. Most people your age, even my age, would, have never have been able to do any of that stuff. And so that is, wow. That is wow. The risk was definitely worth the reward. So let's talk about some of what you're doing right now. You're doing a lot of public speaking now, right?
I am.
Which is cool because a lot of my audience, they're new entrepreneurs, there are people who want to get out and get in front of people and talk and so on. How did you actually go about getting your public speaking, I don't want to say gigs, but let's say just how did you go about getting your public speaking gigs?
Absolutely. Well, I think to start off with, there are three things that I would love to share with your audience that I wish someone had told me more specifically or more concretely when I had started. One is that you don't have to be special to be a public speaker. Yes, I have a very unique story. Yes, it is an advantage, but you don't have to be special. Everyone has their own story, and there's a message from everyone's story. It's about finding your message. It takes time. It takes talking to people. It takes thinking. It takes research. But you iron out that message step by step, conversation by conversation, and eventually you iron it out. Now, what you do is you take that message, and some people very often think, well, why would anyone want to listen to me? The fact of the matter is, no matter who you are in this world, someone will relate to you on your message. It's not about relating to everyone. It's about finding the people who relate to you, which goes to the second part of finding your target audience. I think for a long time, I personally toyed around with the mix between the message and the target audience of what I wanted to say and who it is I wanted to say it to, kind of trying to cover too many bases. But when I really more deeply thought about my with my message, I realized if you figure your message out, that target audience will come naturally.
That is awesome.
And the third one is sales.
Mm-hmm.
It's the bitter, ugly truth, but if you're not making those sales calls, if you're not connecting with people, if you're not really trying to research your target audience more specifically, no one's going to do those sales calls for you, and no one's going to call you on your doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
I make a target of 5 sales calls a day. So I make a target list every Sunday. I make a list for the week. My target audience is universities. So 25 universities that I want to contact for that week that are some type or some activity level involved with international education and focused specifically on Asia. And I call 5 a day. I have a little database or Excel spreadsheet, and I follow the progress on each one, and then I follow up. And follow up is another key. So there's 3 areas there. 1, figure out your message, talk to people. 2, find out from that message who is your target audience, specifically what age group, what region, and then thirdly, make the sales call.
That is awesome. But what if they say no? What if they say we're not interested?
It happens, totally. Here's another very good point, and I've come across this through learning experience alone, is I talk less about myself and more about them in the beginning. I don't start very often with my story or how I introduce myself for this podcast. Usually I tell them point blank what I talk about and then ask them questions about what they're doing, what their problem is, what their pain points are in the university realm and the international education realm. And then I try and bring myself back into it. Well, I speak on this issue, so how about we come up with a plan of how we can work together to address the issue. If they do reject me, or if they do, you know, say we're not interested or we already have a speaking plan, I ask for referrals. And I also ask if they would be interested to keep in contact or keep up to date with what I plan to do in the future. And most of the times they say yes. So that's an open call for you. That's an open invite. Okay, call me back in a month.
That is awesome. That is such good stuff. Seriously. Because that, like, that to everyone, I mean, everyone has to sell. And, you know, even in when you're in a full-time job, you have to sell in some way. So that is really, really golden stuff. Very cool. So what are you doing now? What are your big things that you're doing now?
So using my experience, the whole idea for the business started from wanting to write a book. My story of One White Face is actually the title of my website, as well as the title of my book, which comes from the first week I was working with Toyota. And I was running a meeting, and the top management entered the room and interrupted me, saying, "I hope you realize you're the one white face in the company." And, you know, ever since that moment, I knew I had a choice. I had a choice of how I could take that phrase from them. I had a choice to say that, or feel that I wasn't welcome and I didn't belong there. And I had another choice, which was to take it as a challenge. They took a risk hiring me, and they very well knew what kind of risk they were taking. But I was adamant to show them that I could learn what brought Toyota its success, but at the same time add value to it. That's what I want to bring back now, coming back to the U.S. after being abroad for 3 years and helping to strengthen Toyota's retail Kaizen operations. Now what I'm trying to do is use my experience in a more broad spectrum and how I can use it to help young professionals and Gen Y people my age. I think there's a big challenge for us in the future in America with a big excess of amount of talent, but lack of jobs and struggling economy. A third of the population of the world is in East and Southeast Asia, but very, very little people know anything about Asia. Currently, 50% of the population, the world population, is under the age of 30.
Wow.
That is not all in the U.S., and we need to do something about that. So young professionals who are starting their career off, which includes me, I'm right there, I'm only in the midst of the very, very beginning, need to understand a more vast realm of the international world and global environment and build on their skills to compete. And so what I'm doing in terms of the sharing my experiences is speaking on university campuses, doing workshops on professional development, as well as preparing people to go overseas, and also on cross-cultural communication, whether you're domestic or international, you have to be able to deal with people from other cultures. And then writing the book. My ultimate goal is to write the book, and my dream is to be the number one book gifted to high school and college students in 2011.
That is awesome. Yeah. Man, that is such an awesome concrete goal. Oh, wow.
Well, I hope to inspire young professionals to really think and dream big again and believe in themselves.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. That is so cool. So your blog is onewhiteface.com. And your
yep.
book is going to be called One White Face as well. And is there any other way that people could reach you if they wanted to?
Well, you can shoot me an email. I'd be happy to respond. Hillary.Corna@gmail.com. That's Corna. And I get a lot of inquiries from students and young professionals that have even problems domestically. They work in a multinational corporation and they don't know how to communicate with their bosses. They don't know how to get the message across about a personal or professional problem. I've gotten inquiries from students that they're a senior in college and they don't know what they want to do. And it's really big issue. So I'd be happy to help out anyone that has these kind of interests or questions.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Hillary. I really appreciate it. Your story is awesome, and I know that a lot of people will relate to it, especially, you know, even if they're later on in life, 30s, 40s, maybe even make a change in their career, move to Asia, or at least support a company that's based out of Asia or something like that, because, I mean, it's a huge market, and it's a great opportunity there, as you point out. So I really, really, really appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I think the number one skill that Americans need today, whether exactly like you said, doesn't matter what generation you are, really, is adaptability. The old way of applying our norms as an American doesn't work, and you need to be open to whomever is talking to you based on their alias, their background, their industry, their profession, their title, and you need to understand that, leverage it, and communicate with it. The people that go against it and go with the old ways of doing aren't going to get very far.
That's awesome. Yeah, I fully agree. That is great. cool. Well, I will definitely, I would love to have you on again. And this is great stuff, Hillary. I know that you're going to do some awesome things. So anyone who wants to follow Hillary, you have a Twitter account too, right?
I do.
Okay, what's your Twitter account?
Oh, it's just Hillary.Corna.
See, there you go. So @Hillary.Corna if you're on Twitter. But in onewhiteface.com and also One White Face when it comes out as a book and so on. So thank you so
May
much, Hillary. Hey, that's awesome. You said May? May 2011?
Yep, that's my target.
Awesome. Sweet. All right. Well, thank you so much. And I will, I'll let you go, but definitely I will have you on again.
Thanks so much, Dean. It's been a pleasure.
No problem. Thank you. All right. Yes, I told you that was going to be an awesome interview. And just the fact that she took such a risk in the beginning of her career to jump over to Singapore, I mean, right after graduating from college, that's something that a lot of people would not do. Jumping over to Singapore and looking to find a job, hoping to find a job within a few weeks. The risk that she took was obviously definitely worth the reward. The fact that she was in such a high-level position, it's almost unheard of here. I mean, you would never find that, at least in the United States. You would never find someone who's willing to trust someone who just came out of college with an expense account, with a budget, and so on. So that's absolutely amazing. And then just using the skills of being able to sell, knowing who your market is, and networking, and going from having almost no speaking engagements to being a sought-after speaker in her particular market is pretty dang amazing. So yes, thank you so much, Hillary, for that interview. I learned a ton from that, and I'm just so grateful that you took the time to be on the show. All right, so once again, if you have not visited my new website, youcanworkless.com, totally awesome, should check it out. And not only that, join my newsletter. If you haven't joined my newsletter, check out my new course. I'd love to hear some feedback on it. Because it's stuff that I wish I would have known when I first started. It's stuff that I wish I would have just focused on. Because as soon as I started focusing on it is when I started making more money. Not that I'm rich or anything. Not that I'm even, you know, I still have a full-time job. I don't make enough yet on my side business to move out on my own. So, but it's, I'm making tons more than I was before. Percentage-wise, relatively speaking, I guess you could say. So, yeah, definitely check out my newsletter. Let me know what you think of it. And if you have any feedback, give me some feedback at 714-643-5301. So let me tell you some things that are coming up soon. I'm going to be interviewing, probably not the next podcast, but after that, a woman by the name of Tanya Salcido, who started her own design business, and we're going to ask about how she went about doing that. Also going to be talking about some niche marketing. I've gotten into some niche marketing and I've actually been successful, which is pretty dang cool. I never thought I would be able to do it. Not super successful, but just this last month, if all goes well, I've made between a whopping $50 to $60 a month, which is cool. As long as that's $60 I didn't have before. So, and as soon as I start getting even more traffic to my site, which I'm number 4 for my particular niche right now, it's going to be doing well. We're going to talk about that. Going to talk about how to use those same techniques to help local businesses. To get to the top of Google and so on. We're going to talk a little bit about how to get some workshops going, how to do some webinars, and things that I've just learned in the past few months. So, yeah, it's going to be some good stuff. All right, have a good one, guys, and I'll see you at youcanworkless.com.